Back in the marching band season, my section collectively categorized the personalities of all the people who play certain instruments in a band setting. The bottom denominator is that everyone who joins band is insane. The individual descriptions of each section are far too lengthy to enumerate details, so all I have to say pertains to the saxophone section and its three subsections. The alto saxes are the clinically insane obsessive perverts, no offense intended. The baritone saxes are either the crazy fun outgoing types or the demure back of the room in a hoodie kids who display their true colors when they blow into their loud and proud horns. My section, the tenor saxophones, is the forever loners. The sailors without destinations, the prophets who wrote on the subway walls Wednesday at 3 a.m. We're strong for ourselves, and we're silent for lack of a personality. And this was exactly the image I planned to keep up by spending last Valentine's Day at home. My specific plans? I don't know, they probably just consisted of the usual bus ride home to my old matchbox house on a slanted street and the never-ending cycle of fact-finding for my Korean War novel, which today I still haven't finished. Maybe just acknowledge the holiday, I put on a little soft jazz and let flow the human emotions I tried to divorce myself from the week before. At least that's what I would have done had I not sat down to lunch with my mates the day before. It had been, how long? 5 months I'd known these guys, and all I did was take up a seat at their table. Sure, there was an interesting conversation that would pop up on the radar, but frankly, I simply resumed my earlier ritual that I had known all my previous lives. Stalking in plain sight, I like to call it. Listening to what people around me have to say, just a way to entertain myself and combat the desire to jump into a well of silence that someone forgot to build into this school back in the 70s. Oh well. But this day was different. When I sat down to the table, I was immediately asked to attend some event called the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. My inner historian corrected the classmate across from me, saying that the St. Valentine's Day Massacre was the mass murder of one innocent gangster lover and six members of Bugs Moran's Northside Gang of Prohibition Chicago, masterminded by Al Capone, who, apart from rising fast through the ranks of the Sicilian-controlled Southside Gang, had already sealed the coffins of Moran's predecessors, Dion O'Banion, Jaime Vice, and Schema Drucci. After this millisecond-long tirade flashed through my brain, I asked what was going on for this massacre to remember. Kyle, the gargantuan man-child sitting opposite from me, elaborated that the event was a meeting, technically sanctioned by their unorthodox culture club, to have dinner at an Indian cuisine restaurant on Route 19 and proceed next door to Laserstorm for some fun. Okay, just a quick review. We're going to an unamorous meal and partake in an anarchistic battle of who can piss off the most people by firing their laser guns as fast as possible to celebrate an ancient Roman holiday of love and making it two. Sounds great! My diarrhea mouth was uninhibited by my constipated brain to utter a resounding yes in reply. I was given the time, the address, and only needed to be hip as an RSVP to this opportunity of a lifetime. At least that's what I told myself what it was at home after I recovered the memory amidst a collection of historical facts, Spanish verbs, and homework which crept into my brain after lunch. I mean, come on, Bill. You've never been invited to any sort of get-together without strings attached. This is what normal people do. There's no eighth grade class inviting you to a party because they don't know you, or some stupid birthday where you show up with a generic birthday card and a gift as collateral for stuffing yourself with pizza and cake. This is how normal people do it. I will admit that I was ecstatic. I even reveled in the thought when the memory hit me again at the beginning of school next day. But then I began to wonder. Yes, I had been given this information by word of mouth, but did I really remember it? I asked Kyle, Sohail, Raphael, and all the others at the table at lunch just to make sure. Several times. And out shrouded me on the bus ride back home and in the hours preceding my departure for the little get-together. I mean, yeah, these guys seem affable, friendly, and genuine, but would this really work out? I mean, the last time I accepted an invitation like this, I got stuck at some weird place with weird people from weird parts of town, and I was freaking out. I did not want to repeat a scenario like that. And I mean, come on, Indian food? I've never eaten Indian food in my life. I mean, will I like it? What's the texture? What are the common flavors? Will I puke? Okay, dude, here's the plan. Just eat some leftovers from the fridge. People going on dates eat beforehand so they don't look like pigs. Plus, you're getting rid of some food and you're not being rude to your host. Everybody wins. At least that was the new plan. But did I remember to grab something before I went out? I kept thinking about it on the ride over, and the fact that I might make an idiot of myself, that diarrhea of mine is notorious for doing something stupid, like that time back at camp with, stop it thinking, damn it! You're already late and your palms are sweating like a stuck pig. Breathe. Deep breaths. slowly, silently. We don't want anyone to think you're insecure. Hell, they might already think you are, but that's another story entirely. All of these thoughts and more raced through my head as my mom cruised down 19, my attention focused on my panic, my eyes occasionally picking up details, like the fact that the pure white snow looked more like some evenly uncolored snow colors. Snow cone colored. You see, this is how freaked out I was. I couldn't even English at the point in time. Just, Oh, jeez. I looked back up at the sky, and it was gray as gunmetal, tainted by the dry, eerie-looking exhaust pipes sticking out of the cars before us. And these thoughts continued to race in circles around my consciousness as I exited the car, peered into the restaurant to make sure that it was the right place, and then waved off my mom as I passed through the door, kicking myself for being so late. I said hello around the table, being directed to a chair up against the wall with an unknown, bespeckled, red-faced senior to my front and a bespeckled, dark-haired, homeschooled girl to my left. Or right. Oh, crap, I can't English again. See? Again, demonstration of how crazy I was going. Eventually, I cracked open my shell amidst the cacophony of old friends babbling of meaningless controversies which infatuated their attention to my temporary neighbors. And the greatest thing in the world happened to me in that dimly lighted restaurant on that dank evening. I eventually got to talking with the senior across from me. You know, just a little bit of small talk, getting to know you sort of thing. And I found out that this guy, Andrew, had lived in Wisconsin for a few years and made frequent trips back for Culver's and Cops, the height of cuisine and frozen custard delicacies. And he was planning on studying history down at Pitt. I had just literally died and gone to heaven in that moment. My euphoria was ill-conceived as my diarrhea mouth spun on about pizza places in Connecticut, a fabulous review of Wisconsin eatery, and piping hot questions of his historical interests. The girl on my right, Caroline, was a homeschooled, European-minded activist against prostitution in the continent and a fabulous storyteller who offered me respite from my overworked brain and voice, now soiled with the stench of some appetizer consisting of a soft shell wrapped around potatoes and peas in a deliciously bland, dry, and thirst-intensing dish. With some minor dalliances into plates which were larger than my friend's stomachs, I was eventually filled up, and we proceeded next door to glorious defeats in points racked and kills claimed in laser tag, sweat seeping from my pores under the shirt, my hands, and above my brow, stinging my eyes with their potency. I lived, I loved, I laughed, and relished in this time. I wouldn't be surprised if I found myself king of the hill, top of the list, A number one. Then, sadly, Dad came to pick me up, and I screwed up my opportunity behind the wheel big time, which left me in a foul mood as I climbed the narrow stairs of that matchbox house to my half-room, desperately striving to prevent my brother on the top bunk from waking up. The evening ended with a fond falling asleep in preparation for a plethora of answering new friend requests and working at a dishwasher at Carmody's restaurant just up the road. Valentine's Day had never been important to me, but that night, my spirits lifted like a skyrocket from the darkness of that unfriendly matchbox house, and they've kept up ever since. I've seen a whole new world emerge from that evening. Can I repeat the experience? Nope. Will I do anything for Valentine's Day this year? Nope. My friends are all off at college, and I think I'm just going to write about them. Nothing special, just a novel, without using their names, of course. So why? Why stay at home when you had this great experience? Well, I don't really need to go out looking for friends anymore. I've got all I need.